CliffCentral.com.
There we go.
Yeah, all I know, all I am is you.
Wow, that's a lot of investment in one person. All I am and all I know is you. It's a lot.
It's a lot of pressure here.
It's a lot.
A lot of pressure.
Jizzaz. So listen, I posted a link to a Jordan Peterson interview that was done by GQ magazine. A very astute, very capable author and writer. I don't even know her name, but she was doing this on commission from GQ, and she sat down with Jordan Peterson, and they basically went toe-to-toe for about an hour, maybe an hour and a half.
Fantastic.
Wow. What a powerful argument to watch unfold, and just such excellent points made. Perhaps not even marginally. I'll complete that sentence in a second. I'm just blown away by how adept Jordan Peterson is at keeping his feelings in check and keeping his facts on the table. It's something that I aspire to be able to do. What I was going to say, the sentence before that, is he marginally comes out better. A lot of people would watch the interview and find him to be combative, but that is his style. Mm-hmm. And she's quite combative too, and she holds her ground. To her credit, she's very good. But it's worth taking a look at. If you want some intellectual stimulation over the course of the weekend, then maybe that's for you. You know, I got to bring up something that happened before Cyril Ramaphosa came through to Sandton yesterday for the speech that he made at the summit I was at. He was at a gender commission that was organized by government, a two-day commission that was held in Centurion. And there was, I didn't even know about this until this morning, but there was a woman who took off all her clothes and started showing him her scars from, obviously, violent sexual abuse and that kind of thing. It's a horrible, horrible thing to happen to her. But she basically stripped down in front of the president and made this show of it. And a part of me is extremely sad that it has to go to these lengths for people to take notice of a problem. And clearly the president is aware of the problem of gender-based violence. I don't think he's pretending it's not there. But this is some length to go to make him take note. I don't know if it's necessary. I'm not in that position, and I wasn't in the meeting. But here's what happened, and it got quite a lot of reaction. Play the clip for you and I'll try and explain what's happening in the picture.
Sorry.
Cyril kind of closes his eyes and puts his hand over his face, and you can see he's in some degree of pain. He's sitting next to Balek Ambete. And there are a lot of women in the crowd who are kind of cheering, but she's... She pulls up her top, and I mean she's totally naked underneath. It's what struck me is it's a horrible place to come to, where this is the only way that you can get your cause taken seriously, or where you feel that this is the only way you can get your cause taken seriously. Because again, this is not something that is government's fault. This is the fault of the breakdown of the family, of males in society, of our history. It's a number of very, very complicated things. And I'm by no means a behavioral psychologist. I cannot begin to decode all of this very complicated stuff. But I know it's not Cyril Ramaphosa sitting there. And I do feel for this woman, Phindile Ncube, who says, "They are killing us, Mr. President." So a lot of noise, a lot of women in the crowd, holding their fists up in solidarity with her. You know, we do have to be careful of martyrdom, because it kind of can water down the actual cause in this case. That we do, and we've spoken about this so many times, and I do want to be very careful around this, because it's not my intention to in any way make light of her experience or the very seriousness of her allegations of her own kind of abuse and those kinds of abuses which are perpetuated upon women in this country on a daily basis. These depredations, the things women in South Africa have to put up with, are outrageous. And let's just remember that that's the fault largely of the men in their lives. And sometimes not the men in their lives, but the men who force their way into their lives, whether they like it or not. But I don't like this whole victim Olympics thing either. I don't like the fact that that this woman has to do such undignified things in front of the president of the country in order to establish the seriousness of her problem. It saddens me that it's come to this, that we have lost the ability to vocalize and to explain our problems in words sufficiently to make it matter to people. We are dumbing down, and I'm not saying she is, I'm saying it's generally a problem in this country. Whenever we have a problem with our service delivery, we burn things. We destroy stuff. We should have better means of grappling with our problems, or else we will be treated like infants by those around us.
Sure, but we also need, I think, better receptors to the problems. I think, you know, we keep saying that a lot of the problems is government. We don't want to keep harping on about this. But if the words don't get there anymore, because I'm pretty sure, I mean, I'll give credit to, I don't care who you are in life, I'm sure people have started with words and nothing happens.
No, I totally understand that. You make a very good point. And I'm by no means saying that you know, all these words go heeded. But we need to develop better arguments. Only because then we will be taken more seriously.
Yes.
If we are taken for people who act out when we are in a situation, then we will be treated in turn by that government in a patronizing way. Because they will assume that we cannot process information in a more adult way. That's what worries me. You're allowing yourself to be spoken down to. And that does bother me. I mean, this is a painful thing to see. It's a painful thing for all of us to have to witness, especially because it's all of our problem. It's not the president's problem. It's not just this guy or that guy or this family or that family or this woman or that woman. It's all of our problem. But man, to see it actually happen. Whew. Anyway, I saw something fun. Barney Mtomboti, who I've always liked, he used to write for a number of very, very famous publications in South Africa. He's now still quite vocal on Twitter. He says DIRCO, you know, the Department of International Relations and Cooperation. DIRCO, he says, is a stupid acronym. Rhymes with disco. Change it back to the Department of Foreign Affairs. I agree. Lindiwe Sisulu, of course, the Minister of International Relations and Cooperation. She has welcomed the IORA Council of Ministers today at her Fairmont Zimbali, KwaZulu-Natal province headquarters on the eve of the 18th Council of Ministers meeting. Jesus, does that sound like a waste of time? Am I right? Does IORA Council of Ministers, the 18th Council of Ministers meeting at IORA 20. I mean, what is that? What on earth? What kind of a waste of taxpayers' money is that going to be? And that's our Minister Lindiwe Sisulu from DIRCO, whom Barney Mtomboti says is the dumbest acronym he's ever heard. All right, we're going to get into some whiskey in a little while. We've got a couple of other stories to tell you about. Ben, what do you got on your menu today?
Oh, Gareth, so much. I've got to tell you about this podcast I'm currently listening to. The Joe Rogan Experience. I mean, it really is fantastic. We often speak about it in the show. He interviewed a friend of his called Tony Hinchcliffe, and Tony brings up some very interesting stories. He's a comedian. He's a very sort of like left of center kind of guy, but he's funny. He's like really, really funny. And they're talking about this Japanese game show where it happened a few years ago that a gay man tried to basically get a straight man to orgasm through a blowjob.
is an actual TV show.
Japan.
Oh, okay.
Japan.
But they actually had this on...
actual thing you can find. The other great thing about the Joe Rogan Experience is that when they're doing the show, Joe Rogan's got a guy who checks everything online. So because the podcast is also visual, when you hear about something, they'll show you something.
They show you the visuals.
So you can just Google it straight away and you can find this. And there was such like an outrage of the fact that the straight man was brought to climax by a gay man.
So they were talking about it while showing the video?
But you've got to listen to this podcast because there's so many questions around this. Like, there really are.
Fantastic.
It was such an interesting half-hour conversation I was listening to while I was in Pick and Pay yesterday, laughing by myself doing grocery shopping.
Can I ask you this? Because we've often discussed these crazy Japanese game shows. They are insane.
Completely.
I mean, they have people who go into situations where they get extreme pain is inflicted upon them.
Yeah.
They end up doing insanely stupid stuff too. They embarrass themselves horribly. Japanese game shows are some of the best things that have ever been invented.
Yeah. And what did the West get as a watered-down thing? Fear Factor.
Please. Or Gladiators, where everybody's got more cushions.
We got all this watered-down crap. Japan's where it's at for so long.
Definitely.
But on the reality show topic, another thing I find really, really funny is that Jamie's Italian, right? You know, his string of restaurants.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going so well.
Well, he's even put out a cookbook.
Yeah, but his Jamie's Italian,
Jamie Oliver.
Yeah, the restaurant chain. He had to put £13 million of his own money recently to keep it afloat.
Uh-oh.
And this is public knowledge, and everyone's saying, well, the restaurants are starting to tank. But how about this for a reality show? And people are starting to put a petition together to get Gordon Ramsay's Kitchen Nightmares, or whatever it's called.
Put Jamie Oliver on Gordon Ramsay's show.
They want to make a hybrid where Gordon Ramsay goes into Jamie Oliver's kitchens and tells people why they're so crap.
Oh, that's beautiful. I hope that happens.
That is hilarious. That is the future of reality TV. I reckon these hybrids would be brilliant.
Well, I mean, if you want to see something funny, there's the I think the BBC have just put on the new Jamie Oliver, this Italian show that he does, because he's going around Italy cooking.
I thought,
because the last time I checked in on Jamie Oliver, I don't watch these cooking shows. Last time I saw him, he was young and fresh, and he looks like a grandma now. He really does. He looks like Paul McCartney.
Well, that's that chefing world. It's a lot of hours, huh?
All right. Well, it's time for us to turn our attention to whiskey. There's something we can all agree on, right? And the man in the hot seat this morning is none other than Ken Verriges. He's the guy who came up with and started Whiskey Live and has been running it successfully for some time. I went there on Wednesday night for the grand opening. It's happening all of this weekend at the Sandton Convention Center. Here he is. Ken, what a pleasure to see you. How are you, man?
No, thank you very much. It's great to be here. And I just want to make a small correction. I didn't start Whiskey Live. It was two beautiful ladies who did an amazing job about 16 years ago.
So it's that old, hey?
That's how long it's been going. And we effectively bought it out from the Prime Media Group.
Yeah.
That was some 3-4 years ago.
Well, you've turned it into a much bigger operation.
Yeah, so the idea was just to make it a little bit more accessible to a whole range of people. So we changed it quite significantly. We've got gins now.
Yeah.
In fact, we've got 20 stands of gins. We've got rums. We've got vodkas. We've got tequila, which I love as well. And we've got such an array. So we create a different area. We have that sort of spirit section.
How many stalls, stands, exhibits altogether?
Yeah.
Must be close to 80, 90.
Yeah, we have. I mean, in terms of whiskies alone, I've got over 300 different whiskies on the show.
You've got Japanese ones, I saw.
Japanese. We have Kavalan, which is now from Korea.
Yes.
We had Indian whiskies that are on show. It's actually amazing, the array that we've got on board. And we've got independent bottlers whiskies. So independent bottlers, those are guys who won awards all over the world.
Yeah.
And then they send us probably about 140 different bottles of different whiskies. And they open. In fact, they're half full, three quarters full.
Yeah.
And we bring them to the show.
That's amazing.
So, and that's a little section that you have at the back. So it's really an amazing place for people to go.
Well, listen, first of all, congratulations. As I said, I was there on Wednesday, so I saw the opening night. And the opening night's always, obviously, you know, you invite certain people, so it's a lot quieter. But Friday and Saturday, you said to me, are like pandemonium there. There's so many people, you can't move.
Yeah, so we run it up to Friday. Thursday, which was last night's show, was very busy.
Right.
It really was. So Wednesday was quiet. It's a lovely time to go.
So in other words, you've got to go tonight, otherwise you miss out.
You miss out, unfortunately. But it's busy tonight.
So 16 years, it's changed a lot over that time. It's now become, it's probably the calendar event for whiskey in Johannesburg, certainly in Johannesburg, maybe even in South Africa.
Yes.
And I would imagine you get a lot of people who are bringing you interesting proposals for their own labels, their own... there must be people who also are the big players in the market who come with, you know, 10 brands, 20 brands each, and take up some space there and want to ply their trade. But I imagine the whiskey market in South Africa is huge.
You know, it's interesting because there are not many whiskies that are made in this country.
Yeah.
There are some. Boer Plaas have come through. Obviously, there's the likes of Three Ships and Baines, which is... Distel, let's bring those out. But there are a couple of whiskies that are made in this country, but most of them are from, you know, well, all over the world, but Scotland, Ireland dominate. Obviously America with their bourbons. So they bring a lot of those whiskies into the country. And look, the nice part of it, really, is that there's such an array. There's a taste for everybody. It's quite interesting because we're the biggest whiskey festival in the world.
That's amazing.
It's great that South Africa has it.
Yeah.
And we compete with France to see who's the biggest. And the reality, I suppose, is that for us, I mean, the excitement is to consistently grow it. But it's quite tough in this time to get more and more people coming through. But that's why I changed it up. And
yeah, now it's whiskeys and spirits, right?
Exactly that, yeah.
So now you can, and you said, because gin has been such a big deal over the last couple of years and continues to be. I mean, people are all gin obsessed. You go to any bar in Joburg, Cape Town, Durban, just about anywhere, actually.
Yes.
And everybody's got gin. And gin is what everyone's drinking, and they love the mixes, and they love this fruit in there and this herb. And I mean, there are thousands of different combinations you could do. It's like a gourmet meal for some people. To have a glass of gin. But they also are now saying that rum is the next big thing, right?
Very much so.
People are talking in a big way about rum. I saw there were lots of rums exhibiting there as well. That's exciting.
There's some beautiful rums.
Rum used to be just for pirates and people who were in the Caribbean, right? Now it's for everyone.
So you're right, and I must say the tastes are amazing. And the guys are now blending. So what it's a Pusser's rum, and what they've done is they've now included, from a blend perspective, some orange juice, coconut juice, combined with pineapple juice, and then mix it up with their Pusser's rum. It is unbelievable. They've got it at the show. So
terrific.
So really, they've created some unique blends. Unfortunately, you can't go and buy that particular blend, but they give you the recipe. So you got to go home and make it.
Well, that's amazing that people like that. That gives them that artisanal sort of edge, and they feel like they're part of the creative process.
Well, I think it does work if you've got a little pub at home and you invite your buddies around. I think it's quite nice. You know, you have an opportunity to showcase how clever you really are.
Exactly. Show off a little bit.
Yes.
Now, one of the things that, I mean, you've got an incredible career, and we'll go into that in a small way, but you've done amazing things in the world of advertising. You invented taxi advertising, for example.
Yeah, we were the first guys on board who did the advertising on taxis. We used to put little cassette tapes. In the old days, you remember the C60 cassette tapes? We used to put ads on those particular tapes. And in we'd have the top local international music, and in between we'd place ads. So in those early days, there was no radio. You weren't, if it wasn't a government radio station, it wasn't allowed. You'll remember that it was 702 was the only channel up here outside of that. It was broadcast from Botswana, ostensibly. So we then created our own radio station, which was a music station, a little cassette tape.
Yeah.
We should give it out to the taxi drivers for free. And then they used to play, because it was the latest hits, they would play it, and there was ads in between.
You also, you pioneered a lot of other places and ways of advertising that I suppose now we just take for granted, you know, in shopping malls, for example.
Yeah, so we had an amazing business. When I was in the Prime Media Group, we had a business called Prime Mall, and we had advertising across the board in fact, all the big malls in the country we had the rights to, and we changed it up. We did so many unique types of or forms of advertising in that space. And we brought in a lot of electronic advertising, so digital screens.
Yeah.
So which was great.
And that was in the early days. People didn't really know what that was at the time, and they probably thought, oh, this is expensive and it's not going to work. I mean, you've put up with a lot of those people throughout your career, and then you've ended up proving them wrong.
So look, I always focus, Gareth, the focus was always to find place where people gathered, where people hung out. And then we'd have that form of advertising. So we'd always get involved in that environment. We even had the washroom advertising in our business.
Yeah.
Because you're there for a period of time, you're not going anywhere.
Who knew about that bathroom advertising before you guys started doing it? There wasn't such a thing.
Yeah, so the guys who had pioneered it in the country, a couple of guys, Andrew Kramer, if you remember, Andrew, a couple of guys like that who had pioneered it, and we bought into that business in the early stages, and we just developed it,
And what you're in at the moment is influencer marketing as well, right? This is a new area of interest for you.
Very much so, very much so. So influencer marketing, we've got three different channels of influencer marketing.
Yeah, tell me about them.
We have, the micro-influencer, we call the business the SALT.
Yeah.
And the micro-influencing business, we have just under 100,000 people on a database. We know everything about them. We ask about 70 to 80 questions.
Wow.
So we understand the person really well. And then we match that to the brand. We match that individual. And geographically also choose the person in the correct space for the brand. And then what we do is we then bring that person in. They're already like the brand, and then we bring them in and make them brand lovers. So we educate them about the brand far, far more. Then we brand the vehicle, and we send them out, and then wherever they go, it becomes a word-of-mouth conversation starter.
Sure.
So they see the car.
And it's very authentic, because these are people who, in any case, would have been associated with that brand
very
by
much
their
so.
Own choice.
In Absolutely. The Correct. Right. We won't choose somebody who doesn't use the brand, who doesn't like the brand. So we, wherever they go to a bra at their friends, or they happen to go to work or to gym, people say, "What's that on your car?"
Right.
And of course, starts a conversation. And then what we do is we tie into their social media. And twice a month, we create posts around their social media, be it Facebook or Instagram, Twitter, whatever it may be. And we create those posts in their own words. So it remains authentic. And then because it's a micro-influencer, they have the ability, your friend has the ability to ask you a question.
Right.
And then we have a secondary business, well, not secondary, but to that, another business called Webfluential. Mm-hmm. And that's where we got celebrities or bloggers on that particular channel. We got 30,000 people. So it doesn't necessarily have to be somebody who has, for example, like yourself, who's got over 33 million, I think, on the Twitter or something like that. It's amazing number.
Whatever it is.
But we have the ability to also then have smaller groupings or 30,000, 40,000 people that you can link into. And then they involved from me. Obviously, this is now one-way push communication. You can't ask that person a question.
Sure.
So those are that's the business called Webfluential. And then we have an internship business where we educate the staff of that organization about how to use their own social media to drive the brand of that organization.
So this would make sense. If you're in a company and you guys are selling a certain product, your own staff should be your ambassadors first and foremost,
exactly,
right?
Exactly that. And we hold their hands through the process. We teach them how to do it. We show them how to grow their social media. So we're involved with the process right throughout. And then we show them what they should be doing and shouldn't be doing. And we're involved all the time. And we come in and we showcase graphically what they've done correctly, what they haven't done. And then we start to guide them.
Brilliant.
So it just allows people to really use their own staff well.
I love it. And you've got events like Whiskey Live, which everybody wants to go to. I know people who are lining up to buy these tickets for tonight already.
Oh, that's good.
It's terrific.
There were great queues last night. It was great, but fortunately moving them quickly. But I've also got a whiskey app.
Oh, yeah?
Which is called Whiskey. So instead of the S, it's a double Z.
Yeah?
And that
app.
Got to
download that.
And I swear, Gareth, that
what does it do?
So excited about that app. So for me, it's the best app in the world.
Tell me.
Whiskey. All you do is you pick up your phone, you scan the bottle.
Yeah.
And it tells you everything about that particular whiskey.
God, how
you
brilliant.
You can rate, you can taste it. It gives you nosing, flavors, tastings. Yeah. You can tour the distillery with it.
Are you a bit of a whiskey fanatic? I mean, are you a fundy? Are you one of these people who you could tell me a whole lot about whiskeys?
So look, I'm nowhere near the caliber of the guys that are at the show. I mean, they're just superb. I'm a baby in that regard.
But some of them have dedicated their lives. All I'm asking is you can tell me, like, if I ask you about, you know, whether a certain whiskey is from, I don't know, the Spey area. You'll know that stuff.
Yeah, the basics. The basics.
It's more than I know.
But I'll tell you what the app does, obviously, is it allows everyone to be an expert.
Yeah.
So you can scan a bottle and then come back to the table and tell your mates how clever you are, you know.
Ken and I often talk about something we find very amusing, which is Donald Trump. I mean, I just got back from New York, and the first thing Ken asked me when I saw him on Wednesday is, "Did you see Donald?" Because you find it amusing, like I do, that he drives people so crazy that they can't think, right?
His tweets make people mad, and it is the funniest thing in the world. I mean, I watch this, and every time he tweets, they go absolutely crazy. And I think, you know, he does it on purpose. There's no doubt.
He's throwing a cat among the pigeons every time that they think that they're starting to get back to mental health.
Yes.
Then he destroys their whole world.
And he always has a comment about individuals who oppose him, and he creates a name for
and
them.
And the nicknames.
So funny.
This is what I wanted to ask you. So Whiskey Live is in the Sandton Convention Center. So I was there yesterday. So was Hillary Clinton. Hmm. Did Hillary come down and have a whiskey after her talk? Because
I never saw her. I would have been lovely if they had come down. I heard her and Bill were upstairs, but they didn't. They didn't come and have a whiskey.
They didn't. No. That's a pity, because you know the whiskey would make her less crooked. All right, Ken. Well, listen, it's a terrific show. I'd advise anybody who cares about whiskey, anybody who's interested in all the other spirits that you've got there, to go and check out the world's biggest whiskey festival.
Yes.
I didn't even realize it was the world's biggest. And go and say hello. You'll probably see Ken running around. He's always busy with talking to everybody. So it's not like he's sitting in the VIP lounge the whole time. He's running around saying hi to everybody, running things. And it's a great show. If you want to know more about whiskey, it's a great place to learn. If you're a serious collector, it's a great place to go and see what there is available. And if you're just someone who's curious, who just wants to spend a night out having fun with your friends, tasting a bunch of different whiskies, go along and check it out. It's at the Sandton Convention Center tonight only. And then it's over until next year, but put Absolutely. It in your diary. All right. Thank you so much, sir.
Thank you very much, nice Gareth. Really appreciate it. It was good to see you guys.
Ken Verreges. All right, it's Friday. I hope you're in a good mood, ready to take on the weekend. Hey, Nola, what are you doing this weekend? Have you got any plans? Where are you going? Who are you going to be with? What are you doing?
Look, based on the plans that I had last weekend that mm-hmm. bombed out because of people with their boyfriends and fighting and God knows what.
Unreliable people that don't RSVP, don't tell you what's going on, cancel plans at the last minute.
And yeah, so I've decided to take it easy this weekend, really. I'm going to be at home doing absolutely nothing, binging on series and... Ooh, I think I'm going go-karting tomorrow.
You just made that one up in your head.
No. Oh. I remember we spoke about it yesterday and we're doing it tomorrow. It's just go-karting for me. And,
that's awesome.
And yeah.
I love go-karting. Ben, you remember we used to do that?
Oh, I love go-karting. I actually had a dream about go-karting last night.
Really?
Really. Seriously, I did. But It was actually the F1, but I was go-karting. And it was really like quite something.
You were going at F1 speeds?
No, well, it was...
Jesus, in a go-kart?
I was about to drive an F1 race. I was like, shit, I've never driven one of these cars before. And it turned out it was go-karts. I was like, I'm actually good at go-karting. I can still win. It was very exciting for me.
All right, there are a couple of things that you need to know this morning that we haven't already informed you about. Apparently, you know, Ethiopia just appointed their first female prime minister.
Oh, wow.
Remember? Sorry, president, not prime minister. So the president of Ethiopia is now a woman. And it is largely a ceremonial role, but it's still, she's the top person. Her name is Saleh Workzewude. I don't know how to pronounce that.
I think you do well. You do very well.
She's the president, and now they have gone one step further in Ethiopia. They've also appointed their first woman to head the Supreme Court. So she's now the president of the highest court in the land, Meazza Ashanafi. How do you like that?
Very progressive country, Ethiopia. I mean, sure, they've got some issues still, but they're doing things.
They are
growing.
They're the only country in Africa that has women holding half the cabinet posts. How do you like that?
Also, only country in Africa not to be colonized?
Yeah, well, the history of Ethiopia is fascinating.
Yeah.
Fascinating. If you want to go back in time, you know the old Queen of Sheba idea?
Yeah.
That comes from the Bible? Remember the Queen of Sheba came to visit King Solomon or King David? I can't remember which one it was. Well, Sheba, the Queen of Sheba, used to be from Ethiopia. That's Ethiopia is regarded as having been allied to what might have been Sheba in the old days. So that's where that comes from. But there's also a long history of Egypt and Ethiopia. And Ethiopia used to be, what was the word? They had a particular designation for Ethiopia. It was beyond the Upper Nile, obviously, in the Upper Kingdom. Mm-hmm. But that whole place is just extraordinary because Ethiopia has been, I think, the only African country that was never colonized. There was a period in Second World War where Italy tried to, and in some places successfully did, conquer Ethiopia. That's why there's so many South Africans who ended up fighting in North Africa, among other things. They were fighting Rommel and the Nazis in the northern Sahara, but they were also fighting Mussolini mm-hmm. in Ethiopia. And remember, you have Haile Selassie, the emperor of Ethiopia, who was a fascinating character in his own right. So it's a really interesting place. They've got those temples at Aksum that were carved out of rock underground. If you're a travel and tourism expert, you'll probably be able to articulate this a lot better than I am. But it's on my list of places I want to go to. And just such an interesting nexus of all kinds of cultures. You know, right next door, you've got Sudan, which is a disaster. On the other side, you've got Somalia, which is a disaster. Beneath it, you have some of those Central African countries, which have been in the news for all the wrong reasons in the last 20 years, you know, Rwanda and Burundi and Uganda. But obviously, that's changed significantly. And above it, you have Egypt. So Ethiopia really is in this very, very interesting place in the world. And it seems to me that they're making all the right moves when it comes to showing that they actually aren't going to just give lip service to women in power. They're actually going to make it a very significant part of what they do. And I'm always against anything that isn't merit-based, but I do believe that women haven't had the kind of roles in politics that they might have because most of the world is, you know, heavily weighted towards men, and men have always had the power, and men have always had the vote, where women didn't. And so now there needs to be at least a little bit of consideration given to equally competent women, and that's important, equally competent women, in those positions. It's very cool. So there we go. Now ahead of the Supreme Court and the president, both women in Ethiopia. Interesting. We got to get Fabian. He's on line three. I'm going to talk to him. And we'll take your calls, by the way. If you want to call in just like Fabian has, you can do so on 0861-555-189. Hey, Fabian, what's up?
Hi, Gareth. How's it going?
What's going on, man?
No, nothing much. I was sorry to interrupt your Ethiopia.
No. I that's pretty much all I know about Ethiopia. We're done. I'm exhausted on Ethiopia.
Well, I learned my lesson for the day. anyways, I was giving a call after your guys' discussion with SARS. I think I was listening to the podcast from last week, I'm not sure.
Uh-huh.
And I was just thinking about, you know, this whole adulting thing. Like, I'm at the stage now of my life where, you know, I have to be a proper adult. I'm 28 years old, so I can't consider myself as a child anymore.
Yeah.
But I was just thinking about all the obligations that you have, you know, that you don't get taught or prepared for by society, education, your parents, whoever. Things like having to do your tax submission, what that, you know, entails.
But dude,
I was chatting to, you know, like the woman at SARS, and she was telling me, you know, you were supposed to know that you couldn't have submitted your SARS thing, some code on the e-filing thing. And I'm sitting there, I'm like, but how in the world was I supposed to know that, you know? And then I get in my car and I see that my license has expired. So it's like, you know, you have to, every 5 years, you need a driver's license.
Yeah.
That whole electronic thing that you guys talked about the other day, I tried that. I've got my appointment for Monday.
Don't you reckon it would be a good idea to have a class at school that deals with this stuff?
No, exactly. Like, so I was thinking of, you know, like at varsity or even at school, you know? Like, this life orientation, where instead of them teaching you about, like, pubic hairs and stuff, like, tell me about what I should be preparing for in life, you know? Like, it means that every year I'm going to have to do my tax submission. What does that mean, you know? Like, I'm going to have to do my driver's license. My car's license has to be renewed every
insurance.
Year, you know? Insurance and that type of crap. Like, you kind of come out of varsity and you think, right, salary, clothes, car, house, that's it.
Dude,
you know what?
I think you've just raised something really important, because you know how many people would, first of all, save themselves tons of money if they actually knew what they were doing with their taxes, would save themselves tons of money if they knew what they were doing with insurance, if they were taught what banking is and why it's useful, if they were taught about compound interest. I mean, if you just got a lesson in compound interest as a part of life orientation, where they said to you, just put away 10 rand every month, a lot of people would end up millionaires without even trying, just by implementing that little rule.
Like, everyone's best interests are at heart here. Everyone. Yeah.
And also, they should have political and civic duty. Like, you should have a class that deals with, these are the things that you vote for when you vote on this side of the spectrum. This is what things you vote for if you vote on the other side. Because people don't know what they're voting for. They vote for a person. They go, I like the look of that candidate, or I like the colors of that party flag. People are dumb, man. They need to be conscientized to this stuff.
No, like, that's such a good point, right? And like, one of the reasons I completely agree with you is because I'm in the corporate world, and banking is kind of my thing. So that compound interest thing is exactly, I can identify with that 100%.
Yeah.
But outside of that, I think in terms of what you're mentioning now, from having a political understanding and things that, you know, gone are those days where you are the expert of one thing and that one thing only. You need to be an accountant, and you need to know more. Like, the guys that kind of in the office environment, the guys that, yes, they are experts within their field, but they're in touch with everything else around them, you know? The guys that understand economies and industries outside of what their expertise are. It's not just a specialist in accounting. It's now a specialist in accounting that understands the political influences within the likes of Ethiopia and all those things, and they can apply that within the environment, you know?
Yeah.
Those are the guys that that are sought after now within the corporate world. And I think our education system kind of needs to tailor for that as well, you know, on a very basic level. I think that it allows for it already within this life orientation thing.
Well, what if
but just obviously implement it better?
What if they had to do very practical things too, like this is how your switchboard works in your house if your electricity goes out. This is what's happening.
Yeah.
And stuff like how do you dress for a job interview? And basic stuff like how do you eat in front of people without making them throw up because you're using your hands?
Yeah.
I'm being very basic here, but this is the stuff a lot of people don't get because they don't get it from their parents. Parents are shit. They don't get it from their teachers because their teachers are teaching them the syllabus of school. And there's so much stuff that people need to know if they want to integrate usefully into society and make their lives better that they're not taught.
Exactly.
I'm with you. Dude, start this. I'll back you 100%. Start a company that does it.
I don't know. I was kind of just frustrated. Like, life is already so tough as it is. Just, like, the ability to go to work and come back is already so tough. And now, with all these other extra things that form part of it, it's just that, like, you kind of wish that someone had just engaged, you know? Like, adulting is not just about earning a salary, you know? Mm-hmm. Adulting is about having that balance and having to know how to change the life bulb on a very basic system, you know?
Yeah.
And there's just so much that is expected of you that people don't talk about, that you're just naturally supposed to know what's going on and how to do it and how to know about it.
I agree with you. And it could even go into like what's appropriate behavior around women or men in the office. You know, what's the appropriate way to react to being flirted with? These are the kinds of things that people need to learn, and no one ever teaches them this.
Yeah. Look, my saving grace is in terms of just high-level thinking and expanding my mind. I'm not trying to flatter you guys here, but that's the one thing that I truly value from the podcast.
Oh, wow.
That you have a variety of things that you talk about. I mean, I would never have thought that I would actually consider planting a plant or, you know, getting a plant in my house, but you both have that desire for me now to say that, listen,
nice.
I need it, you know? I want it, in fact.
Stuff
like that, like, and everything from a political sort of influence.
So with lifestyle, we've managed to get you planting a plant. Next thing you'll want to grow an actual human. And you might actually end up being a good parent. Who knows?
Yeah, I think that's a bit of a stretch, but yeah, I suppose that could be the end goal, yeah.
I love it. Thanks, dude.
And no, all right, thanks, Fabian. Thanks, guys, for the great show. Appreciate that.
Awesome, my man. Cheers.
All right.
Bye. Bye. Wow. Karina says on the messages this morning, and you can message us on 0797482090, as a Canadian woman living in Cape Town, I find that misogyny and violence against women comes from South African men of all races and cultures. It's my opinion that this behavior is a byproduct of apartheid, 24 years of segregation, and then consequently being shunned by the world. It's been a main contributing factor to the way that men treat women here. Hence the stats. SA numbers that came out last month, stats SA numbers rather, that came out last month about fatherless children. We spoke about that. 60% of the registrations of births in South Africa at the moment are registered. The children are registered, but they're registered without their father's name on the birth certificate. That's also a very, very worrying statistic. And South Africa is the number one country in the world where women are killed or raped by someone that they know.
Sure.
Now there's the extra responsibility of having to be calm and eloquent in order to get your message across. We must package our words and our points properly so that men and the supposedly intelligent leaders of this land can hear and understand what we're trying to say. It's high time leaders of this country open their eyes and man up. It's time that women speak up and stop enabling the behavior of some of these men. Things really need to change and quickly. Well, Karina, I couldn't agree with any of that more. So you're not going to find any disagreement with me. Top Kasi, you know, Kasi Tops, he's changed it to Top Kasi now.
Has he gone solo?
I don't know. I think he's just messing around because he's bored.
Top would sound singular as
I don't
opposed
know.
To the Tops.
Tops Kasi.
Okay, Tops Kasi.
Says, I don't think there's enough space in jail to fit all of us in for having Malusi Gigaba's penis on our phone. They can't lock us all up because even my gran, he says, has the video. For Pete's sake. They must just fire this useless Gigaba. Now that's a video I wouldn't mind having. One where they say to him, you're fired.
we after you left yesterday, we spoke about Superior's cartoon. Have you seen it?
No.
It's brilliant. It's really, really good. So it's more about the video that you should be worried about is him of the Guptas.
Mm.
And the penis is now Maluski Gaba, and the body is Atul Gupta.
Okay, I did see it. Love it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry, I wasn't sure which one you were talking about, but I've seen that one.
Yeah, particularly smart.
Yeah, there are a couple of stories going on in the news. People are still talking about Khashoggi, but I think until they find the body parts, because of course they cut him up. You know, until they find that, there's nothing new really. Jonathan Janssen, Professor Jonathan Janssen, who we love, says, "Call me old-fashioned, but I never visit a school in South Africa without wearing a jacket and tie. It's my way of signaling respect for teaching, for showing learners that they matter."
Hmm.
Isn't that nice?
Wonderful.
You want to hear more?
Yeah.
He's such an interesting guy. So it's my way, he says, of showing respect for teaching, for showing learners they matter, and for helping build a culture in schools that respects the professionalism of the teacher. So today it is school inspiration visits from Kloetersville to Elsie's River to Guguletu after a leadership lecture to international business students on campus, etc. That's his day today. So whatever you're doing today, I hope you feel smart. I hope you look smart. I hope you're adding value wherever you are. Isn't that cool?
Very nice.
All right, and then Kelly says, "Why is SIA in PE? I saw a massive blue light brigade yesterday. We never get those. Is it SIA that got the blue light brigade?" Really? SIA doesn't get blue light brigades. He would love one. He would love. Nolo, can you imagine how much he'd love to be in a blue light brigade?
Oh my God, we would love to hear all about it.
Sean says, "Hey guys, I'm hanging like the gardens of Babylon today, but I'm motivated as hell after Garrett's inspirational opening monologue this morning." Sure, I didn't mean it to be. It was actually Adrian Gore's, but thanks. "Morning, guys. Feel so good listening live. First, Ben takes away my decades of history, and now he won't be here Tuesdays and Thursdays. What the Samantha Markle is wrong with you, Ben?"
Mm.
No, we're just changing things. Don't get panicky, Jennifer. What, did she just compare you with Samantha Markle?
No, I think once Samantha Markle comes into a phrase, it means the person means business. There's no messing around. If you're forced to quote Samantha Markle or reference her or just mention her, there's no laughing matter.
I saw Michael Jordan's very excited about the launch of Rain. That happened this week. And Cyril's talking about all the small startups that we need to fund and we need to start supporting in South Africa. NASPAS has just announced they will invest a monumental 1.4 billion rand. Yep, you heard that right. In technology startups. And that's the kind of foresight the country needs, according to everybody. If you're going by the numbers alone, you'd have to say Cyril Ramaphosa's investment summit last week was a massive success. About 290 billion rand has been pledged towards South Africa's economy over the next decade. "The investment strike by business is over," the former trade unionist exclaimed. "This investment," he said, "is the type of flood to lift many boats." And he flagged the employment of our people as the most important boat of all. So there we go. Even NASPAS pouring money back in. And this is a big change since Musibenzi Zwane's time in charge of the mining sector. It was a sector. He sacked it. Where the only thing that seemed to bother him was the health of the Guptas' investments. So lots of people talking about that today too. And an interesting new decision by NASPAS to invest a whole 1.4 billion rand in tech startups. Very, very cool. Well, speaking of businesses that are tech businesses, because you can say many things about South Africa, but we are quite innovative, and one of the places that we're being innovative is at Auto Trader. I mean, George Meany comes in here every week, and he sits and tells us about cars, and he tells us about the lifestyle around cars and the things that affect those of us who are motorists and those of us who are interested in cars, but actually, he's got a tech business. I mean, that's what it is, right, George? Isn't it a tech business? There's no way to put it other than that.
Morning, Gareth. That is flipping absolutely accurate. It's a technology business.
Yeah, you connect people to vehicles, and you connect them to deals, and you connect them to each other.
Yeah. I mean, technically, we've always been what's referred to as a marketplace. And usually a marketplace is where you can go and get everything in a particular category.
Yeah.
And then you can buy and sell. So we're a marketplace, but a technology business underlying that.
Well, tell me, since we gather every Friday to talk to you about all kinds of things to do with cars, how has the market itself changed in the last little while? And you often, I mean, you've said it, but other people also say it, that the car sales are a very good indicator of whether things are going well or they're going badly, or the economy is stagnant. I mean, what are we seeing at the moment?
So the new car sales have been under pressure for a long time. There were signs this year of a bit of a recovery. But people are nervous, and I think it's representative of consumers that are nervous to buy. People switch more and more to used cars in an economy like ours, and then they downgrade to cheaper cars or more cost effective cars in an economy like this, and we see that happening. One of the first things that I was going to bring up today is we're going to see a fuel price reduction potentially in the beginning of November. But is it enough? I mean, we somewhere between 17 and 18 rand now. So people downgrade, they're nervous to spend money, the economy's tight. But you know what? At the end of the day, South Africa has had positive GDP for quite a while now. Even although that's close to zero, mm-hmm. At least we haven't been in recessionary type times. Mm-hmm. So the economy can't survive, I think, without the automotive industry. If our manufacturers in South Africa left, we'd be in trouble. And a lot of our economy relies on that manufacturing process.
All right, so let's turn our attention to less macro but more interesting things. You've got Car of the Year.
Yep.
What's happening with the Car of the Year? When is the actual announcement of the Car of the Year?
It's next year, March.
And people are allowed to vote?
Yep, they're allowed to vote. The voting closes next Friday, I think. It closes Monday the 5th, not next Friday.
Okay.
We're flabbergasted at the amount of votes we got. Short period of
thousands.
Time, we've got over 39,000 votes.
Jesus.
For cars.
It's incredible. That's people impressive. Love cars.
Unbelievable.
And they love having an opinion about cars.
Absolutely. We're blown away by the number of consumer votes that we've got. So that's very exciting. We didn't expect this kind of voting. We haven't even marketed it.
Sure. That's just
we haven't even marketed. We're only starting to kind of put up some marketing material to get the message
so
out.
So how does the voting work? Like, if I go on there, what am I going to find?
You're going to find a list of cars, and that list of cars has a little vote box, and all you need to do is click the ones that you want to vote for.
Super.
That's it. That's easy.
Very good. Go along to autotrader.co.za for more.
Well, this particular website is autotradercoty.co.za.
That stands for Car of the Year.
Car of the Year. Longest, most prestigious Car of the Year in South Africa, modeled on International Car of the Years. And then I said that the petrol price relief is predicted for November. This is off the back of reducing oil prices, not off the back of the economy strengthening. So if the rand didn't weaken, we might have seen up to about an 80 cents reduction, but we're probably only going to see somewhere in the region of about 20 cents reduction. Ugh. If the current trend continues.
That's not going to help anybody.
Yeah, I mean, it's not very much, but
we'll take it.
So it'll drop the price to 17 rand and 8 cents, which is great. And then VW has revealed that they are working on a design for what they call is a sub Amarok, which is a compact Bucky. Almost like, remember the Opel Corsa Buckies?
Yeah, people loved those.
Yeah, they loved them. So they're calling this thing the sub Amarok. And it's not...
It doesn't mean it goes underwater.
No, it's not a submarine.
You have to spell it out for some people.
No, you're right.
Okay. I'm going to have one of those sub Amaroks because I've got a dam on the property.
Who's driving the Dutchman's Ferrari outside?
Ooh, whose is it? Ben's?
No, what?
Is it yours? Oh, is it Ken's?
Ken's, okay. Sorry, that? Ken.
What is it?
Nissan GTR.
Oh, okay. Wow. Okay. Is that what you call it?
Yes.
That's hilarious. All right.
Anyway. And then Kia and Hyundai reveal that they are developing a solar charging piece of technology for future cars, which is a roof with solar panels in it. There's three types of solar panels. The one will be installed in hybrid cars.
Yeah.
And can charge 30 to 60% of the battery during the course of a day.
Wow.
And the other version will be installed into ICE cars, internal combustion engine cars, and that'll run the electronics and the electrics in the car. And the last one will be installed in electric cars, which
but
obviously.
But that sounds like quite a lot of charge you can generate there, 30-60%. That's not bad.
It's not
with
bad.
Just the roof, and it's not going to look ugly.
No, doesn't look ugly to me. It looks like a normal glass roof.
Cool.
Apparently, this roof can come semi-translucent, so sun can shine through it. And you know, maybe this is part of the answer to the battery issue within electric cars.
Well, it makes sense if you're driving in the sun that you can charge from it.
Particularly applicable in South Africa, if you ask me.
No, we've got a lot of sun
because we've got a lot of sun in the country. And then very lastly, Uber launched a safety toolkit for riders and drivers. I don't know if you saw this.
Tell me about it.
It'll hit the apps in the next few weeks, and it is a part of the app that allows you to allocate emergency contacts to an emergency button, you can connect directly to private emergency services or security response if you are in a precarious position or under threat.
So whether you're the driver, the Uber driver, or the
passenger, you can use this button on their app to call emergency services, because you know, we've heard about some horror stories with Uber.
I mean, there are a few, and obviously they make the news. I always feel more sorry for the drivers than I do for us, because they have to put up with drunk people and stupid people and abusive people, and you know how everybody gets. They think they own the Uber.
Yeah.
You're just getting a ride.
Yeah.
Someone's charging you some money to get a ride. You don't own the car. You don't get to sleep on the back seat because you're drunk. You don't get to throw up in the car. You don't get to abuse the guy. You don't get to choose your music and all that shit. If they let you do that, that's nice of them.
Exactly.
It's their car.
Exactly. It's their business. They're providing you with the service, and there are some rules there. So I dug out this very interesting little saying. In 1998, they said, don't get into a car with strangers. In 2008, they said, don't meet people from the internet alone. In 2018, Uber, order yourself a stranger from the internet to get into a car alone.
Exactly. Very bad advice from the 1980s to now. But it shows you how much things have changed.
Exactly.
And you think you know that guy because it says like the dude's name and his registration. You're like, yeah, that's enough information for me.
And you don't know him from a bar of soap.
I'm in. Love it. All right, George, thanks so much.
Thanks,
man.
Gareth.
Always good. George Meany, you can catch the new episode of Auto Central, which is recorded every week here at cliffcentral.com, and then we repeat it every other week so that you get to hear all the fresh stuff. And if you did miss it for some reason, you get to hear it twice. If you did miss it, you get to hear it the next week, but you can hear it twice if you like as well.
You hear it as many times as you like if you download the podcast.
Every Monday at 9, and listen when it suits you. If you're too busy at 9 on a Monday, I mean, who isn't?
Exactly.
People have got things to do. You guys have got things to do, like tell us all about the latest news. All right, thank you so much, George. Good to check in with you.
Cheers.
We will obviously have lots of good stuff to talk about after the weekend. Ben is planning to play some golf. Nola's going go-karting. I'm off to Durban.
Oh, nice.
Looking forward to that. I'm speaking today at the Durban Entrepreneurs Club, which is a really interesting collection of small business owners in Durban. Some very, very impressive people there who've built up and generated enormous value in businesses in the Durban area. And let me tell you something, I have all the time in the world to talk to entrepreneurs. I've never met one who didn't teach me something. I've never met one who doesn't have either courage in bucket loads or stubbornness in bucket loads or personality in bucket loads. They're always the most interesting people. So I'm very excited to go and meet them. That's this evening. And otherwise, just chilling. Hopefully the weather's not too crappy. I heard from somebody it's raining nonstop all along the coast. Is that what you've heard?
Yeah, Joburg is partly cloudy tomorrow, apparently. So I'm hoping it doesn't rain, because we've got trick or treating tomorrow night in our estate.
Is it tomorrow? Because now I understood.
Because this is like the longest.
It's been going on for the whole of this week.
It's because the 31st was in midweek. That's why.
Yeah, but last weekend kids were doing it. I mean, it's just diabetes, really.
Saturday.
That's the scariest thing of Halloween.
Last Saturday and Sunday, people were saying kids were walking around trick or treating. Then Wednesday was actual Halloween.
Yeah.
So I think probably because it was in the week, a lot of people didn't, but some people still did.
Yeah.
Dressed up and all the rest. Now we're doing it this weekend as well?
Yep.
Are you going to dress up?
Yep.
Oh, what are you going to do?
I do my standard outfit each year. I'll show you what it
looks like. You have the same one every year?
Well, for the last 2 years, I've got my standard outfit.
I'll show what is it? Describe it to us, George.
It is a vampire.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
You make a pretty good vampire, George.
That's impressive.
It's very good. You've got the same outfit in your cupboard. You know where to go every year.
I know where
year.
To go. Got the contact lenses. And
brilliant. All right.
Dress up in
are
the
you
same
doing
way.
Anything at the Auto Trader offices?
No, actually, we should have. We didn't. Yeah, we do. We celebrate the things that go on during the year, but for some reason, we didn't do Halloween this year.
Tell me, are you still trying to do your dressing down for Friday's thing, or what do you got on there? Ah, good, the sneakers.
Yeah.
George is slowly starting to get everybody used to not wearing fancy formal outfits. You know, I was at this Discovery Summit yesterday, and the only two guys who were wearing sneakers like me were Robbie Brosen, who founded Nando's, and Ian Furr, who started Sorbet.
Lovely.
Such nice people. And the three of us were drawn to each other because we were the only ones who weren't wearing smart shoes.
Lovely, lovely. I promote that 100%. Suits are shit.
I like that too. I agree completely. All right, Ben, anything you want to throw in?
Yeah,
the
I
last
want to just
minute?
Finish off the week with Julian Assange. You know, he's still in that Ecuadorian embassy.
He still hasn't got out.
Well, he's the worst house guest ever, okay? So it's cost Ecuador about $6 million to have this dipshit in there. And he's now trying to sue them for a violation of his human rights because they said, look, you've got a cat. Clean up after your cat and feed the cat because you're a nonsense. It's like this absolute nuisance. He's skateboarding in the corridors. He's getting mouthy with the security guards. He's just acting like an Australian, basically, which Ecuador should have really seen coming. But he's now saying that what they're doing is they're clamping down on him and saying he has to pay for his own internet. So he's not even getting free porn anymore. He's got to pay for his internet. He's got to pay for his calls.
Well, he should.
Well, of course he should, Gareth. But he's saying this is inhumane, and what they're doing is that they're trying to push him out.
Yeah, but you see, this is what happens when you have a house guest and they spend more than two nights.
Too long, yeah.
I say more than two nights. Some people can put up with longer. They start getting demanding.
Exactly.
And they start getting entitled.
Julian Assange has been a house guest for 6 years.
Yeah, it's too long.
Of course, that sexual harassment case has actually been dropped in Sweden, but because he's violated his bail, if he's on the streets of London, he could get arrested and he could get back extradited back to Washington, D.C., where he doesn't want to be. So he's a bit stuffed, but he's not. But acting ungrateful isn't exactly going to cut it either.
No, he's looking for trouble because they'll kick him out.
So Ecuador says all they want is a little bit of order, seeing as there are other people in the embassy, so he can't behave the way he just thinks he's like a spoiled child. And he's saying, well, they're just trying to get me out. But yeah, he's got a cat. The cat's been in a few memes, standing at the window. He's wearing a suit and tie. You can actually follow the cat on Twitter.
My word.
It's at Embassy Cat.
It's beautiful.
So that's Julian Assange's life. He's just having a bit of a bitch.
Yeah,
by being a bitch.
All right, everybody, have a good weekend. We will see you on Monday. Oi, what was that? We'll see you on Monday at 6 o'clock, bright and early. All right, hang on. I've got something else for you before we go. We've got the unnews, which I sometimes remember to do and sometimes forget, but don't worry, I'll get it right now. So let's look at the unnews and then I'll get back to Fleetwood Mac. I know you were getting excited about that, some old school, which people love. All right, here it is, the stuff that you need to know, the unnews for this morning. Let's not mess around. Where do we begin? I'll tell you where we begin. We begin with the BLF. They're very upset with Cyril Ramaphosa telling South Africans they must move on from white monopoly capital. Without white monopoly capital, they don't have much because the land thing is already owned by the ANC and the EFF. They're desperately seeking a new master for a new oppressive narrative. So if you have one, please feel free to tweet it to them. At BLF fuckers. The floods in Venice are getting out of control and the floating city is once and for all being seen as a sinking city. It's about to go under. Not to worry though, Dubai is in the process of building its own Venice and promises it to be far more reliable and more Italian than ever before. And finally, it's a big weekend for Springbok fans, especially the ones in London. They left because South Africa is so dreadful, but they can't wait to put on their Bok jerseys, spend a fortune on Kuk Biltong from Putney, get drunk on brandy and sing the national anthem before the game as they're proud South Africans. Makes perfect sense, doesn't it? Let's try that again. Here's Fleetwood Mac. Love it. Some old school for you. CliffCentral.com.